Accession number 17621, William Ver, Reel 10.
Mr. Ver, Reel 10. You're up on the spur, Mr. Oh. Ver, and, well, actually, you've come off it, haven't you?
We've come off of the position in the Calabrito Valley. We had quite a few casualties.
What happened to you next?
Well, we'd had a few casualties, including the company commander. We then came out back to the to Cesarurunca, where we'd started off from the previous, either the day or 2 days previously. There we got some. We're given some rum, which is about the only time I've ever had any rum given. We were stripped off. We were absolutely soaking wet, trying to get clothes dry, and. In the meantime, this was just B Company, because we'd been the reserve company as far as I remember. So we'd been the first ones to go in, because we was reserve, spare. And I think the remainder of the battalion had gone back up the valley. And we sort of followed them on. And Bear Arse Ridge was up on the right. It was past where we'd been previously, where Major Ballas had been killed. As far as I remember, it was farther on that valley. And it was Bear Arse Ridge and Cockerutso Spur and Cockerutso Village. And I know I was going along there and we stopped. And this ridge was to the right of it, as you could say, was the Monte Camino Massif, where I think the Guards Brigade were up there. And we were bullets protecting their left flank, you could say. Or we had been. And we stopped and I said, I'll go have a look. I'll go up to the top of the ridge and have a look over, see if I can see anything. I was corporal by then. I'd been made a full corporal. So I goes up to this ridge and I got to the top and there's a sanger, what we call a sanger, which is just some stones piled around to make a sort of
like a stone breastwork.
That's right. And there was a sergeant there, and I thought he was alive at first. And he's because he was just looking like I was gone there. I'd gone there to look, and he was sat and he was looking like that. But he just had just a hole there through his head, and just a. One tickle, wasn't no longer than that. Wasn't above an inch long. Must have killed instantly, and of course, it didn't bleed. And it just is all through the temple. It was Sergeant Kennedy, they called him. I knew who it was because there was Christmas cards. Somebody must have been previously in, taking his pay book or something out of his pocket, and there was some Christmas cards that was to him, which I knew they were addressed to. It was in another company, you see, I didn't know him personally. So I thought, bye, I'm getting down from here, because obviously he'd been hit from somebody upon this massive. So I went back down, and we continued along. And by that time, the other companies, I think, had preceded us into Cockerutso. And we finished up on the spur there at the other side, looking out over the countryside there. And there was Major Craggs again from the 70th Field Regiment with his forward observation officer anyway. Because we could see from up there, could see a long way, and we could see some, mini werf as they call them, firing. Morning minis, we used to call them. They were like a six-barreled mortar which fired rockets. And you could just see them firing, and I pointed them out to him and get some gunfire down onto them anyway. He did do, I think. And I don't remember much after that, because that was, I think, the next. I don't know. I think the next thing was the Grigliano after that. I don't know what happened after we come out of Cockerutso.
Were these spurs,
we went for a rest again, I think.
Were these spurs very steep? The hills, mountains you're moving over, were they very steep?
Well, Monte Camino was exceedingly. It was like that in all rock. And of course he was Germans on the top, and he could hardly move really, because if a mortar bomb landed in those sort of conditions, I mean, you'd got the fragments from the mortar bomb, you'd also all the rock fragments as well, which doubled the effect of the shrapnel. And on a night you could see mortar fire in those conditions. You could see if there were a mortar bombardment, and it was just like a firework display with all the sparks that the metal fragments were striking from the rocks. You know, it was a real display of fireworks, and it was all, but all those sparks, they were all probably shattering rocks, which were flying about as bad, just as bad as being hit with a piece of metal, as a piece of a rock. Killed you just as well if it hit you.
It must have been difficult moving under such very wet conditions in high ground, climbing slopes of that nature.
Well, it was, but there wasn't a lot of mud, because it was most of those hills are rock. In fact, in some positions you can't even dig. That's why you built these what we call sangars, which is an Indian name for breastwork, as you say.
Did you get hot food up to you during the day or during the night? Or
sometimes. Whatever? It depended on what your positions. If you were in a position where the quartermaster could get the cooks to he'd make some hot bacon sandwiches or something like that and put them in a insulated container. And if it was in a position to get to you, they used to do the best to get you some hot food. But as likely as not, you lived on composite rations, which was 14 men, a box which sustained 14 men for a day, with everything, cigarettes, sweets, toilet paper, salt, butter, all you're supposed to need for one day was in one of those boxes. You'd a tin of biscuits, hermetically sealed, with some bars of chocolate inside. And you chop the box up to make a fire. You use the tin to boil your water, to warm your tin for your food, and to make your tea as well. Like, so it was self-contained, really.
And the functions of nature would have to be done on the same spot, would they?
You just took your intentional tool and dug yourself a hole, and that was it. But if you happened to be in a position where you was, like where we were at Calabrito, as I say, I was on my own in the stitching, and I could only lay down in it. And I don't know how I am, but I had to go, but all I could do was dig under myself, and I couldn't get up. I couldn't get up out of the trench. So that's it. That's all you could do. Yeah.
Transport and moving transport through the hills. Again, did you have mules at this point? Had they come in?
We didn't have mules. Transport, they could go so far with transport on the roads, but as you say, at places like Casino, they had to have mules, because it was a 3-4 hour trip up to the front line from the bottom, and the same being wounded down.
What were the German tactics at this point? They were being gradually pushed back, weren't they?
Their tactics was to hold you up as much as ever possible, because they were in the building the defences around Casino, the Gustav line. The Gustav. This was the winter line that we were trying to fight through, and he was holding us up as long as ever possible to give them as much time as possible back at Casino in the what they call the winter line. Which of course they did very well. I mean, it didn't just include Casino, it was called the Battle of Casino, but it was all the hills all around there, which we were in to the west of Casino.
Were they good class troops?
Pardon?
Were they good grade troops?
Germans?
The Germans?
Oh, absolutely. First class with paratroops. Mainly German parachutists were holding Casino. Some other troops were lower class. They were the top class. Were the paratroops. I think there were two divisions of paratroops. I mean, even though they'd never dropped parachutists after Crete, they still came under the Air Force, under the Luftwaffe, and still wore the same smocks and helmets that they'd always worn. They still fought as an elite. And there were two or three men could hold a whole battalion up. Two determined men. I mean, they were top class, actually.
Did they make good use of the high ground they were on?
Did they make good use? Oh, yeah, yes. The thing is, you see, a lot of those hills, you could get onto them, but you couldn't hold them, and they didn't need to have any men on them, because if they got one particular position high enough with an OP on it, they could cover perhaps two or three hills by artillery fire, so that it could be made untenable anyway for anyone that got on it. And as I say, two or three men could hold a whole battalion up if they were well positioned, well determined, and supplied well with ammunition, I suppose. The machine gun, which did do frequently.
And you yourself found yourselves being held up by small groups of men?
Well, yes. They'd hold off as long as ever possible, and then they'd probably fade away. I mean, I'm not saying they held out until they were killed necessarily, but I think the orders were to hold out as long as ever possible. And I mean, the position to choose, of course, would be such as would cover a good lot of ground, which gave them a wide range to cover, so that or maybe they'd have two, five of them, two directions covering a swathe of ground where you had to walk up, and they could hold you up for ages before eventually they'd have to pull back, I suppose, when they run out of ammunition or got low. But they were very determined, and they were very good troops. Probably the best.
So after this particular battle area of the campaign, where did you go? Did you say you came out for rest then?
After there, I think we also come out for a rest. That was February. When we went in again, I think it must have been across the Garigliano River. I don't think we didn't actually fight to get across it. I think the crossing had already been attained.
What date would this be?
Well, as I say, my 21st birthday was in those positions. And that was, my birthday is the 4th of February. So it must have been beginning of February sometime, I should think. We were in those positions for, I think, two or three weeks.
So the Garigliano was the next
river
event in your,
yeah,
on your experience. What are your memories of that?
Well, we went across the Garigliano up the hill. And one of our other companies had already put an attack in up this hill, taking some prisoners. And they said, "Oh, you're all right. Here, they're all old men, all 40-year-old, all in the 40s, and like as other, these, what they used to call stomach battalions, Germans, these old men, it's not sick, they aren't much good for hotels." Said, "They're all old men." So I thought, "Oh, we're all right then." So we had to put another attack in. And our company carried on. And our platoon was the reserve platoon, which means to say we were the last of the three platoons going forward. And as the first platoon got amongst these positions, all hell let loose. You know, they threw everything at us, and we had to just scatter where we were. There were all sorts coming over, and there was a sanger again, just one in all this hillside. There was just one tree, and there was this sanger built around it, and the three of us dived into this, sangha. There were rocks as well you could have got behind, but this looked handier, so we all jumped in that. The lad threw a Bren gun in with us. We realised as soon as we got in, they got a fixed line on it with a machine gun. So once we got in, we couldn't get out. It was hitting, you could see where it gouged in the rock, where he must have had it trained on this sanger and then clamped up so that every time he pulled the trigger, it was hitting it. So we was in there biggest part of that day, and we could hear the troops in front. There was quite a few were killed. Mr. Coots, his Batman, Jack Viles, he was hit. And he was hit in the pouch here, and he had some flares and that, for the Vera pistol, and they all set alight and burnt. And he was hit. Sergeant Makepeace, who I mentioned previously, he was killed, he was hit. And there were several others were killed, and some were taken prisoner. So we were left there. We thought we were all that were left of the company. And there was our platoon commander at that time was Mr. Smith, who had joined us at Salerno. He had a little bit of a windy bloke, really. You could get him into going back if you wanted. He didn't take a lot of persuading. But anyway, there were me and these two lads, and him. Another lad had gone past us, Dick Steele. He got killed in Greece. Told you about. And he came past holding his chair. And I just seen him going past, staggering, half bent. I said, "What's up, Dick?" He said, "I mean it." And he had with leather jerkins at that time. He goes back, and all tonight had been hit in his pocket, but he'd a mirror. His wallet, and the bullet must have been pretty well spent or something, and it had lodged in his wallet, but he felt it had been hit. I mean, thump of it. So anyway, he went back, and one or two in front of her, they slid back, took the packs off and went back. So it left me and these two lads. I'd taken my pack off in the meantime in this hangar. So eventually we dived out, and there was Mr. Smith there. And he said, "Oh, I've been hit. I'll have to go back to the MOC." He said, "You stay here." You see, that was me and these were the two. "You stay here, and I'll have to go back. I've been hit. A piece of rock had hit him or something. On the motorbomb, he'd thrown some rock up. I don't know not much." And so we were stuck there. So I said, "Oh, come on, get over this here, bit of a wall." So we got over this wall and we had some chocolate and a bar of chocolate and the smoke. And then there were some more troops come up, and I think it was C Company. They must have been going in to make a counter-attack. So I don't know who the officer was made. I don't know who was in charge of C Company then. And I said, I think we're the only one last of the bus, you know. I said, "I think we're the only ones that's left." And Mr. Smith's gone back. He told us to stay. Oh, he said, "Right, join in with us," you see. So we let him go past. And I said, "Oh, come on, we'll go find battalion headquarters for you." So we get in dark then. And find the battalion headquarters, staggered into it, because I didn't know where anywhere was. Because we'd just sort of come up and gone straight into it. The RSM was in a... laid out asleep in a slit trench about 6 foot deep. You know, could hardly see me without it, but so I wakened him up. I says, "Corporal Verne," I says, "two men," I says, we don't know where our company is, B Company." "Oh, it's over there, go look over there somewhere. Pitch black on a strange mountainside. I mean, you don't know where." So I said, "Oh, come, wait here." So we were a couple of Germans. Must be prisoners who were laid asleep, so we got the side of them and went to sleep. The next thing we knew, they were calling for carriers for a ration party, waking us all up, you see, to go down to the bottom of the hill to carry boxes of compo rations and ammunition up. Anyway, a lad came, each company was sending a guide. For guiding the chaps with the rations to their positions. So the chap come from, they were from B Company, so I said, oh, we'll go back with them. So we went back. But there were just about enough men left. We're all in amongst some rocks. And we just had enough men to form a platoon out of a company, you see. We just had enough, there were just enough for a platoon, about 30 or 40 left. So we're in those positions then for about, it seemed about 3 weeks, I think. Then we were relieved. I think it were the commandos that relieved us. I think it were commandos relieved us. And we came down, back down, and we'll talk about being kids out of school, you know. After we'd been up there that long, we got lousy. That was the first time, only time I'd ever been lousy. You know, suddenly you find you've got lice. Where they come from, I don't know. But you suddenly feel yourself, feel them crawling, and you've got them. You've had your clothes on for, say, 2 or 3 weeks. You've never had your boots off. Yeah, supposed to get lousy, I suppose. So we got relieved and we came back down.
Before we come to your relief, you crossed the river itself quite comfortably, had you, the Garigliano?
Oh, the troops had previously made the crossing. Yes. Yes,
so you yourselves crossed, and you'd gone up into action there.
Yeah.
And landed amongst these Germans.
Yeah. They were on the other side of the river, you see.
Did you get close for hand-to-hand fighting with the Germans?
We didn't get close in that. We didn't. The troops that were in front of us, because we were, as I say, we were reserve platoon. We were too far back to be involved in it, but they were involved in it, those at the front. I don't say hand to hand, but they were certainly in amongst the German positions before the Germans opened fire, you see. They let them get involved like that.
After you'd lost a very large proportion of your company.
Yeah. Some have been taken prisoner. Some have been, as I said, they got in right amongst the German positions. Some have been wounded. We went back, sent the party back the following day, stretcher party. And there were quite a few wounded still laid out there amongst the dead. And the Germans had actually been out to them and given them some water and that, you know.
Did they tend to treat the wounded when they got them? I mean, your wounded, the Germans treat you quite well. Did they tend to treat the wounded quite well?
I should say so, yes. I should say both sides did, yeah. I mean...
You said that one or two men, when you're up on the top there, one or two men, other than wounded men, had dropped the packs and gone back. Was this against orders, or...
Well, it was really, yes.
Were they getting out?
It wasn't a matter of running away. It was a matter of, you were in a position that you couldn't do a thing about it. It was a matter of, what could you do? They'd more or less done away with the first two platoons. All you'd have done, if you'd have got up and walked into it, had been wiped your arm out as well.
And so of course there were no senior people there to tell them what to do. They were.
It was our platoon commander, but he didn't tell us what to do. As I say, he got his head down as well. But he should have been the one to tell us. But
and this was the action where B Company really got hit.
They did, yeah. Yes, they did. Yeah, he got. I don't know which army we lost. I don't know what the strength of the company was when we went in, but we certainly down to about 40 afterwards.
And of your own section, how many were left?
We didn't get involved, you see, because, as I say, we were reserve platoon.
You were,
so we didn't actually get, you see, all happened before we were up to them, you see.
Had they been caught in the open?
It was all open, yes. It was just an open hillside. There was rock and all this sort of thing. You could get behind a bit of rock. But, you see, that, as far as I remember, there were... The Germans waited until they were really amongst their positions. And once they opened up, that was it. They had a leg to stand sort of thing. They must have been concealed well, and apparently there must have been about a battalion there, you know, Germans. And we thought there were just a few old wrecks. But there wasn't.
When you were pulled back, then you would really be not much day for fighting for a day, too, were you?
Well, we didn't do anything after that, actually. All we did were patrols, standing. We didn't even go. All we did was standing patrols, which was putting a group of men out just after it got dark, out in front, and just laying out in front in case anybody came up, just like standing, what they call a standing patrol or a listening patrol. It wasn't an aggressive patrol. You weren't going in looking for trouble. You just, and that was more or less the routine. In fact, we were glad it started snowing while we was up there. We got snow, covered in snow, so it wasn't very pleasant either. And I went to sleep, and I jumped with just one blanket, I think. All we'd done was laying into amongst these rocks. You know, it was. I don't know how it makes you wonder how you survived the conditions, really. And I thought it's rain. I pulled a blanket over when I went up, covered in the snow.
Did you get on any standing patrols? Did you have any to take out?
Oh yes, we all did. We did it in our turn. One would go out.
Did you black your faces for this kind of thing?
No. With nothing to black it with.
And would you as a corporal be a patrol leader, or did you go out with someone else?
So you probably would be a patrol leader, corporal.
How many men would be on a patrol?
Just depends. Sometimes only three. If you were just on a reconnaissance patrol, you didn't want too many. Yeah.
Standing patrol.
Three a bit of a standing patrol. Your different patrol. Your standing patrol. It was more or less like a listening patrol. It was just a matter of having, rather than really a patrol, it was just a group of men that were laid out forward of the main ones, so that they'd be the first to hear anything. If there was anything to hear, anybody approaching, they'd be the first to hear. Like a listening patrol, I suppose. Reconnaissance patrol, as I say, corporal perhaps and two or three men. If you were sort of going out, sort of in position out, if you were told to go out to take a prisoner, you'd probably take about half a dozen.
Yeah, that'd be a fighting patrol.
Well,
a
fighting patrol could be as big as you like. Could be company strength if you want. You know, I mean, the Germans would send them out in about 90 minutes at a time or something like that. What you could call a fighting patrol.
I hadn't asked you about patrols, which I should have done. And had you been on a variety of patrols during the course of your time in Italy?
Yes, everybody. Everybody did. It was one of the worst things of the lot. Actually, was a patrol, because you never knew what you were up against. You didn't know. I mean, when you were in your position with your platoon, you know, everybody who were around you, you had a bit of support and all this sort of thing. You went out on a patrol. I mean, you just went out, and if there was somebody there, they fired on you, and you didn't know they were there. So you were on the hiding to nothing, really. So it was just a thing that nobody liked. You know, if you had to detail a patrol that say get half a dozen men and go take them out, so kill those men and me again. It did my turn. I would, of course, nobody liked it, including the NCOs or even the officers, I suppose. Nobody liked the patrols. I think one of the worst things of the lot, because you didn't know where you were walking. You could have been stepping on a mine or through a tripwire or whatever, because it was unknown territory.